Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to The First Cut. I'm Greg Ducharme, joined tonight by Kyle Porter and Mark Immelman, and the American Express is concluded here on Sunday night, and what a tournament it was. For a while there, it looked like this tournament was over. Andrew Landry had a 6-shot lead at one point over Scottie Scheffler, and then all of a sudden, Abraham Answer makes birdie on 17, and the tournament is tied. Kyle, how many times did you have to rewrite your story here tonight?
Well, I was not writing tonight. Here's what happened to me, Greg. I was kind of flipping back and forth. I had the weekend off from writing, and I was flipping back and forth between the Chiefs, Titans, and the golf. And as soon as Landry got to like 27, I was like, whatever, I'm going to watch the football. And then I flip back and I'm like, wait a sec. So I had to rewind, see what happened. It was this happens so many times on the PGA Tour. It looks like it's going to be a rout. And then it's not. Things just kind of flip-flop back and forth. It's just, you know, we say it all the time, it's so difficult to win, even when you're up 3, 4, 5 shots on the back nine on a Sunday.
Now, Mark, we hear this all the time. It's really difficult to win. Do you think from Andrew Landry this was a case of it's difficult to win, or do you think this is just he's going to make 3 bogeys at some point and they just happen to be at that point in the tournament?
Hey, listen, Greg, more importantly, can we first talk about the massive bogey that I made in our one-and-done league this week?
Oh, man.
Good grief. I mean, yeah, I picked Ben on. I'm all confident about this. I was vacillating with Sung J.M., and Scottie Scheffler was sort of tickling my fancy, but I'm thinking, okay, Texas down the road's a good idea. So Arn gets out there with 5 straight birdies, and I'm like, go, boy. Next thing, he's got Sunday off, so I officially hate one-and-done already, and we're barely into January.
Yeah,
I thought you were touting yourself as like the one-and-done king.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make up some ground now.
I mean, I almost thought about taking Ben on, too, after you did, I mean, with your record and all, but I'm glad I didn't.
But you know what? In the vein of one-and-done, Kyle, shut up. In the vein of one and done and watching Andrew Landry, it's now proven to me that anything can happen. I mean, cause this is a guy, he missed, 7 of 8 cuts coming into this event.
Yeah. And 5 in a row.
Uh-huh. And then, and his average score looking through those numbers was about 71, which is doing you no favors in the desert. But he comes to a place where he's comfortable. He's been in a playoff there with John Rahm before, and 26 under par later, he's the winner. And for me, you bring up a good question. You know, he came in trailing Scheffler. Scheffler spilled the lead early with a bogey, but, you know, Landry did what he needed to do. He made a few birdies starting out in the front side, 3 and turned 3 under, and then went on a tear there, 10, 11, 12. And you think, okay, like Kyle said, this thing's done. But 13 is a tough par 3. I can forgive the 4 there. 14 is a mean par 4. I can give one up there. And 15, he had a really nice par putt that clipped the edge. So that's 3 straights. But I got to tell you something. I was so impressed with his fortitude, his mental fortitude, because he spoke of the fact, get this, he said he just felt like he moved a little closer to the ball on the tee on 15. And the driver came out a little flatter, got a bit more roll. He said he felt comfortable with that swing coming in. He flushes one into 17, makes the 2. I mean, that tee shot he hit down 18. I know the tee shot McIlroy hit at the Players at 18 last year was probably one for the ages. But that tee shot down 18 there at the stadium, stadium course, the PGA West, it's tough too with all that trouble down the left-hand side, especially for a guy with a big strong grip. And here's a guy who's got gumption enough to make a slight adjustment to address. He turns the 3 bogey stretch into a par birdie birdie finish and he wins. So I think it was a little of golf and I think you guys said it. It's just so hard to win, but man, you know, he was sublime, then he was ridiculous, then he was sublime again, and now he's a PGA Tour winner for the second time.
Well, yeah. And even when he was struggling, you know, even 16, he's coming off 3 bogeys in a row, he hits a good tee shot, And then his second shot, you're like, that, I don't know if that was his intended line, but it was a great shot because, you know, Fowler had just, I think Fowler hit before him and he had just gone into the, you know, the huge bunker off to the left. And the line that Andrew Landry was on was like, I mean, he was a couple feet from the, from like rolling all the way down to the bunker and he left himself, you know, it didn't work out. He didn't get up and down for birdie, but he kept, I thought, hitting aggressive shots, which is what you have to do and just hope that it kind of works out in the end.
Well, you go from all of a sudden you're six up. If you're six shots up walking off the 12th hole the way that he was, you're probably not thinking, I got to continue to hit aggressive shots, right? You're probably thinking, now is it, this is the time where I got to start running the ball. I got to start hitting the middle of green, hitting fairways, get through these six holes and get in and I'll have my victory. It doesn't even matter what Abraham Answer does. I mean, he's at 27 under. Abraham Answer shoots 63, had a putt to get to 25 under and it didn't go in. So 24, you look at that, he has to basically give it up at that point to do it. And he was able to stay calm. I mean, he tried his best to give it up, a three putt at 13 after hitting a green and then just gets a little sloppy on 14 and 15. And the way that Pete Dye ends his golf courses with 16, 17 and 18, they're not easy. They're designed for this. They're designed for the theater. They're designed for Andrew Landry coming down the stretch. And you're right. I mean, he had to stay aggressive down that stretch and he did. And it was really impressive to watch. There are certain tournaments where he pops up. Last year, he came in third in the John Deere. He won 2018. He won at the Valero Texas Open. He pops up, but we don't really hear his name very often. Why do you think he's so streaky? Kyle, start with you.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was actually just looking at his, kind of his finishes since that Texas Open. He finished top 10 at the Quicken Loans National, and then he finished third at the John Deere, and I think those were his only top 10 since winning the 2018 Texas Open, which we're coming up on almost 2 years now. And these are the guys that I don't know, man. I don't get it, because if you look at somebody like, I don't know, even like a Fowler who's in the final group with him, who he doesn't win a ton, you know, he wins some. But he, like, the way he plays and his finishes, they make sense. Like, when he wins, you're like, yeah, of course, like, because he's, like, in the mix a lot. And then when Andrew Landry wins, you're like, he's like, never in the mix. So, I don't get why, and maybe it's something Mark can speak to, just in terms of, like, psyche and kind of the stuff that's going on in your head. I don't get why some guys, you know, pop up and, Sandy Lyle, like two top 10 finishes at majors and they're both wins. Maybe he's got a few more than that, but those are the guys that don't make sense to me. But apparently he was so, and this kind of struck me as he finished his round, he was so calm and he just acted like, oh, are we going to another hole? Like that, he didn't even really like, you know, react or celebrate. So I don't know. It's something it's really difficult to explain, I think, when you're talking about guys that, you know, don't finish high up, but then they'll pop up and win a tournament or two every third year.
You know, for me, it's so hard because we can't get inside the player's head and so much of the stuff, you know, numbers and data are a big deal and players, you know, research this sort of stuff, but there's that, the strokes gained with your heart and the strokes gained with your mind and no one can ever do that because you never really know. And then there's strokes lost with bad breaks and certain folks just get those sorts of things. And the folks that don't lose too many strokes with bad breaks are the folks that can sort of deal with the rough and the smooth. The one thing to bear in mind, and I'm not going to take a step as far back as what Carl did, back to the Texas Open, which, it appears to me, looking at these golf courses he's won at, he's very comfortable in places where you can flatten the driver off the tee, roll the thing out there a little bit, because that's his game. Doesn't hit the ball very high. And so if there's some breezy, blustery, crosswind sort of conditions, he's going to thrive. But he has a guy who is newly married. They've just had a little baby, a year or so ago. You've just won on the tour, and then you're trying to come to grips with that too, because a lot of the times, and the youngsters I've worked with who've won, you suddenly get into the mindset of not doing what you've done en route to the victory. You start to try and do something different, So you can prove to the competition and yourself that you weren't a flash in the pan. And so all of a sudden, guys start changing things, and they're changing clubs, and then there are new deals that come potentially sometimes for guys with clubs. Landry stayed with a club manufacturer, the same club manufacturer. But guys start trying different things in an effort to win again, instead of just doing what they did to get to where they were. And so there's all that on the go. And then when you've got a new kid in the house, I know Kyle can talk to this because he's got a plethora of them, and one who's very young. You know, that throws the routine off a little bit. And you're trying to be dad on the scene, yet you still got to work, and then you're up at nights and you can't practice. So there's a lot of human stuff that's brought to bear. But the one thing I know for certain, oftentimes it's really hard to follow up a victory with another. And you want to so much enjoy the win, but so much of the competitor is like, well, I've got to prove that I was worthy. And then if you're not really poised and you don't have someone in your camp saying, just continue to do you, you can easily go barking up the wrong tree in a hurry.
Don't you think that goes to expectation? Like if you're a player who goes out there and expects to win when they play, then I would theorize that you're going to say, hey, I expect to win. What I'm doing is going to lead to a win. When it happens, it's not a surprise. If you're going to say, well, now I need to validate my victory by winning again, then, and you're going to change your process in the meantime, it almost tells me that, hey, maybe it is a flash that you won. Maybe it is a one at one. If it surprised you that you won, should it not surprise us?
Well,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. That's a really good point. I mean, I don't think anyone's really surprised. I mean, when you have the first victory, it takes a while to settle in because, you know, sometimes you're playing against guys that you've looked up to, especially for a youngster like an Andrew Landry, for argument's sake. And then you beat your heroes and that takes a little while to settle. But if you're on the PGA Tour, you know, the first few weeks I can see you being, okay, I've got to figure out how I belong. But once you're in there and you've been on the tour for a while and you've come up hard scrabble, you sort of like, well, I belong here. And then you break through and get that victory. You know, going from the PGA to, going from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour is a big jump. We've seen some golfers that are caught in that never land between the two tours. They're just too good for Korn Ferry and they're just not good enough for the tour. But once you've kept yourself on the tour for a while, you're good enough. But the difference between that and a perennial contender in tournaments is a huge leap. You know, the difference between that and winning once in a while, it happens if it's your week. You know, you catch the lightning in the bottle. So there's some expectation. But I tell you what, being a consistent winner on tour, I can show you and Kyle mentioned Ricky Fowler. I mean, this guy should win in bushels. But it's just really hard to win a lot on the tour.
So speaking of Ricky Fowler, because you bring up a great point, Ricky enters the weekend in great position, looking like a guy that, I mean, he's the class of the field. He's the most expensive in DraftKings. He's the guy that everybody's looking at saying, hey, this is Ricky's time to win. And he just, once again, he fades on the weekend. And I don't know what it is, the putting. I know he lost strokes game putting today. I know that the putter let him down a little bit. But I know that he played the more difficult golf course on the stadium course on Saturday and Sunday. But still, he just seems to fade a little bit. Kyle, are you disappointed when you look at a Ricky Fowler and you see him fade on the weekend after shooting 65, 64 in the first two rounds?
Yeah, not just for Fowler, but anybody who's a top 15, top 20 guy, and you're the best guy in the field, and you're up near the lead on Friday night, and then you come out, I mean, I don't know, man, like, you can't go out in the final group and put up a 71. It just felt like, you know, where I think Ricky gets into this thing, and I've kind of theorized this for a while, that he's so steady, which is such a great trait when it comes to professional golf. And this is why I think he's going to win a US Open or an Open Championship, because he doesn't get too high or too low. And it's almost like you need a little, like, you know, come on, like oomph on a Sunday to go, like, reel off five birdies in a row. And he just plays this steady golf that in tournaments where 27 under is winning, he just doesn't seem to have, like, the juice to go and do it. And I realize that's an overreaction to, like, what we saw on the weekend. One on Sunday. It feels like there should be more there.
In Ricky's defense, he struck the ball fine today. He was a bit ragged. He wasn't his best. He didn't have his best stuff. But he gave himself a lot of looks early, and uncharacteristically on some spectacular greens. He just looked like he was misreading putts, because the putts he hit looked like they had his attention for a while. He wasn't up and out of them real quick. So you know he was hitting his line. So you just get those days really where, you know, you want to make a few putts, you misread a few, then they start to not go in, then all of a sudden that hole looks like it's the size of a thimble. And then the next thing, it becomes a little mental and you start to get in your own way. So I think today wasn't necessarily an outlier for Fowler, but he played well enough to win. He just didn't make the putts that you have to win an event. And that again gets back to this data. You know, everyone says you got to drive the ball well to get a leg up on your competition. If you want to win tournaments, you've got to make putts when it counts. And that means the final round typically of the event. If you're in contention, it becomes a putting contest. And Ricky just didn't do his share today.
Unfortunately, go ahead, Kyle.
Real quick on Fowler, it is interesting. I'm looking at his 5 wins on the PGA Tour. And I always go back to the players, the 67 on Sunday where he plays the last 5 and 6 under, whatever it was. And I kind of always point to that. But to your point about the weekend stuff, so he wins Phoenix last year. He goes 64, 65, 64, 74. That's where he had I think it was a triple when he hit it in the water.
Yeah, that was unfortunate then.
That whole mess. So, 2017 Honda, he goes 66, 66, 65, 71. So he does have these, like, even when he wins, it's like, how's this going to go? I think Honda Sunday was like, it was kind of windy and it was a little, I think that was a really tough day, but, yeah, a lot of his final rounds have been higher than, his first 3 days of scoring, even at tournaments where he wins.
No question about it. That's what I was going to say. Unfortunately, it's not an outlier. This day, as Mark said, it's not too much of an outlier. And that you look at the statistics from last year, and he was 15th in round 1 scoring average, 28th in round 2 scoring average, 21st in round 3 scoring average, 123rd in round 4 scoring average. We saw it all year last year. I mean, 74 at the Farmer, 74 at the Waste Management, which he backed his way into a win, 71 in Mexico. He did shoot 67 at the Honda, but, and that was a good round in his backyard. It was a really nice final round. He almost won, almost got into a playoff with Brooks Koepka and Keith Mitchell. 71 at the API, 76 at the Players Championship, 77 at the PGA Championship, 72 at the Memorial, 72 at the US Open. I mean, it just goes on and on. 74 at the Open. There's something about Sundays for him, and I'm ready to see Ricky get the job done. I'm kind of on the fence here. I don't know if this is just what we're going to get out of Ricky, because it's starting to seem that way, and it really bums me out, especially when I pick Ricky Fowler in the one and done pool, just like you did, Kyle.
Yeah, I did. And you know, I'm with you. Like I agree with you, but I also look at, again, the players that he won. That was a huge spot. And then the Masters that he, you know, almost went to a playoff with Patrick Reed. Those are as big a spots as you can get. And he played unbelievable golf down the stretch. And I think, you know, I'd be interested to look at, and I haven't done this deep of a dive on it, but how many of those was he playing from like the fourth to last group versus how many was he in the final group? You know, in terms of like a lot of those wins I just mentioned, I know he was in the final pairing. And I don't know if that's a nerve thing. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely real. And the two that I point to, the players and then the, what was that, 18 Masters, he definitely wasn't in the final pairing. So I don't know. That's something, you know, that's sort of this narrative about him. And sometimes it, you know, turns out to be true.
It's just disappointing to watch to me. I cause I'm such a big Ricky fan. I love the guy. I love his game. I just want him to do well, and I want this to stop. I want the narrative that Ricky can't close, that Ricky just can't win the big tournament. I want it to stop because he's too good. He's too good for that big of a difference between rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4. It disappoints me. But I want to bring up another young player on a brighter note who have played a fantastic tournament, and he's another one of these guys. He's almost the third player in a row on the PGA Tour that we've seen come out of the President's Cup, and that's Abraham Answer. Abraham has he shot a 63 today, which was just a fantastic round. I don't think he was ready to be tied for the lead. I think he's way behind Andrew Landry when he's at 27 under, and he's just trying to finish as strong as he can. And all of a sudden he looks up after birdie and 17, he's tied for the lead. So I can't imagine the emotions that he was going through, but he was really calm in the interview. This is a guy that I think is definitely on the rise. Mark, What are your thoughts about this player going forward?
Yeah, I think on the rise is the understatement. I mean, this, he last year sprung to prominence with a victory down in Australia, over a year ago now. And then last year steadily built on this on the PGA Tour and just week in and week out would pop up onto leaderboards. And as he did so, you could see that Abraham was beginning to understand who he was as both a player and a competitor. And a competitor, man, he has got all sorts of guts. I will hearken back to last year in Mexico at the World Golf Championships event. He's paired with Tiger for the first two rounds. I'm on the call out there on the golf course. And so, you know, even in Mexico, he was getting a lion's share of the fan support, but Tiger is Tiger, and everyone was going bananas to see him out there for the first time. And Abraham took this like water on a duck's back. The guy hit the ball in the fairway, hit the ball on the green, didn't putt very well that week, but still looked so measured and so comfortable with who he was between the ropes, no matter the situation. And then, of course, earns his way onto the President's Cup after promising Captain Ernie Els this, which that takes a little of them cojones, you know. And then he goes down there to Australia and is just a man child. Sadly, doesn't win in the singles against Woods, but he's just sort of coming into his own in the biggest way. And the cool thing about him, you know, he's not going to impose you physically. You walk up to him and he's a small guy. He's nice, softly spoken. Very, very deep thinker and his game, he won't blow you away with the ball striking, but he's accurate. He hits the same shot all the time. The putting is the same sort of thing. Throughout the week, he won't fill it up like a fowler, but when he needs to make a putt, he's got that special sense for the moment. You know, the Woods, Nicklaus, those sorts of guys that when you have to make one, you knock it down. And Anser has a little bit of that stuff about him. And so I think the future is now. And I feel like this final round 63 around a visually imposing golf course, this is only going to pump up that confidence even more. And I look forward to what the rest of this year and beyond holds for him.
Maybe getting a one and done pick, Kyle. What do you think next week?
Yeah, I think the thing that impresses me, I've been a little more hesitant on answer, but, you know, I was looking at his strokes gain numbers and he goes, his first year on tour is 2016. He's 144th tee to green. I think he's on Korn Ferry the next year. And then in 18, he's 70th tee to green. Last year, he's 44th tee to green. And so far this year, it looks like he's going to be inside the, you know, top 30, top 40, something like that. So, when you're making that consistent improvement, another guy we've seen this from is Xander Schauffele, who's really, you know, he started out at that U.S. Open, whatever, 3 or 4 years ago, and you're like, oh, okay, I think it was 3 years ago. But he's gotten steadily better every year. Anser was starting from farther back in terms of his stats and how good he was. But that steady improvement, if that's your trajectory, that's a really good thing. And he's kind of won me over. He's kind of fun. Like I kind of enjoy watching him. And he, you know, I was listening to him kind of break down his round afterwards, and the way he talks about it is engaging. And I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in on Abraham Anser.
Engaging, no question about it. I mean, he has a calm Ricky Fowler, but there's an intensity behind that calmness that I notice, and that's what draws me to him. I feel like Mark was comparing some of those attributes to like a Woods and a Nicklaus, the competitor with no fear, and that's that intensity is what I see in Abraham, and it's just something that it can't really be taught. It's something you see, it's something you sense. Like he was in the post-round interview today, he had, like I said earlier, no chance of winning. He goes out there and shoots 63. It shouldn't be a chance of winning because Andrew Landry's running away with it and started ahead. But all of a sudden he gets that sniff of the lead, and now he's, I thought, upset that he missed the birdie putt on 18. He seemed very upset about that. And he seemed, although he played really well, he seemed like it bothered him that he didn't win. And it's almost hard to picture that because you're not really in position to win going into the week. And then until you make a birdie on the second to last hole, now all of a sudden you're in position. So there's an intensity and a belief about him. I think it's going to be fun to watch going forward.
He's got a little blue chip about him, which I like too. You know, he's got that like junkyard dog kind of thing going on. You know, where he's always the small guy in the ring and he's going to battle and claw and you know, he's just never going to go away. He doesn't play himself out of events. And to Kyle's observation about the strokes gained improvement, He's done this without really making any adjustments to his technique, but it's just, grit and a desire and even a lot of shot selection as he's understood now what he's able to do that you just see a guy that, you know, this is going to sound silly, but he plays to shoot the lowest score he can. You know, with certain guys, it looks like they play and it comes so easy that there's not any of that real sort of grit about them, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I love it when Mark compares guys who haven't won to Tiger and Jack Nicklaus.
I understand what he's getting at.
I look
at,
beyond the resume, Kyle. I thought you'd be all up on this boy because he went to Oklahoma for 2 years. You know that. Eh?
Yeah, I went to Oklahoma State. That's why I'm down on
I see what you're right. Gotcha.
So both you and Abraham are rivals to the next guy we got to talk about here. Scottie Scheffler went to the University of Texas, still seeking that first career PGA Tour victory. Scotty has had quite an impressive rookie year to the PGA Tour. I mean, what do you think, guys? This is now his third top seven finish. He's got a T3 at the Bermuda Championship, T7 at the Military Tribute at the Greenbrier, T5 at the RSM, and then this finish here this week. I mean, what do you make of that, Kyle?
Yeah, it's been impressive. You know, he's kind of unassuming. I saw him at the U.S. Open. I think it was at Erin Hills. And you're like, yeah, he's shirt untucked. He kind of just ambles around and then he just keeps posting these top tens. He's super impressive. I think he is the Victor Hovland Scotty Scheffler race for rookie of the year could be really good. Could be really interesting once Hovland gets over and plays some PGA Tour events. So. Yeah, he's been great. He is, how old is he? Is he 23?
He is, hang on, let me get, he is 23 years old. Yep.
Okay. So he's a little older than like, you know, some of the guys that when they're because I think he played all 4 years at Texas. So
you're using the word, just so you know, you're using the word old and 23 in the same sentence here.
Joaquin Neiman
tour these days, right?
Joaquin Neiman can barely vote. I mean, that guy like just turned 19. So, yeah. I really like Scotty Scheffler a lot. He's going to be up inside the top 60 in the world. You know, he's a really interesting, like, if he has a great year, could he make a kind of an outside run at the Ryder Cup? You know, and that sounds crazy right now because we're like six events into the year, or I guess three events into the year. But yeah, I think he's really, really good.
Is he crazy? Is he crazy, Mark? Is Kyle crazy here?
Well, he calls me out for comparing Anser to Nicklaus and Woods. Now he's talking about Ryder Cup. I'm like, let's pump the brakes just a little bit. Now, you know what? There's a funny role reversal on the go here between Kyle and me because, you know, ordinarily Kyle's your strokes gain statistical guy where I talk about, you know, some of that other ethereal sort of stuff. And I'm looking through Scotty's numbers and he's 14 strokes gained off the tee. He pounds it off the tee. I mean, the guy averaging over 310 yards. So, you know, he's turning many of the par fours onto the tour into, you know, drivers and nine irons and drivers and wedges. And we've seen what those guys do. The Dustin Johnsons, the Rory McIlroys, the guys that bust the thing off the tee. The game just comes easy to them. The only thing, because I look through the numbers and everything's there, the putting is a little inconsistent, but he's still gaining strokes in the field. The only thing that concerns me about Scotty is he's got to be a little careful with some of the leg action, which kind of shoots out from underneath him. And he looks like he's sort of prone to a bit of a ball that wants to hook under pressure. And there was one or two of them that he was fighting off coming down the stretch. But that being said, when you can reduce the 16th hole there at the PGA West to a driver and a five iron, I mean, that is mammoth. Okay. And if you got those sorts of gears, you can, when you're rolling in putts, you can compete with anyone. And he's sort of got an old head on young shoulders. And I guess playing in the slipstream of Jordan Spieth will teach you some of that. So, he's a good one. I mean, when he came out off number one off the Korn Ferry Tour, I asked a good buddy of mine, fellow announced colleague, Craig Perks. I'm like, what's the scoop? And Perksy, Players Champion, was like, he's got it. This boy is good. And so far, Craig has been right.
Well, I think the Korn Ferry thing, you go Sungjae the year before, you go Scotty Scheffler last year in terms of the regular season, who won the money list. And I mean, that's a real thing. You're going out and winning multiple times. That's a really strong and becoming stronger tour That, I mean, you've got my attention if you're coming out off of that tour as the number one guy, because I don't think, you know, that's not a joke. So, yeah, I'm way in on Scotty Scheffler, Scotty Scheffler both this year and beyond that.
And you know, that's a great point, Kyle, because that's the design, the PGA Tour designed the Korn Ferry Tour to be this, right? It's the road to the PGA Tour. And we get a little bit familiar with these guys, especially, I mean, it's really the guys that are leading the way. It's the guys near the top that we become a little more familiar with, the guys that win out there on the Korn Ferry Tour, maybe like a Tommy Gainey or something like that. And so there's definitely an awareness, and it's definitely bringing, I think Scotty Scheffler came into this year on the PGA Tour with a little bit bigger of a name than some of the players in the past because of that. So I think they've done a really nice job with the Korn Ferry Tour and getting that set up. And all the players are going through there now. So the next stars are going to come through the Korn Ferry Tour with very few sort of generational talent exceptions. So the last thing we want to get to here before we get to a break is our weekly standings here for the one and done. Mark, you mentioned it earlier, Ben on not the best outing for him. And he did miss the cut after starting with that. So I was looking at it saying, man, Mark really is the king of one and done. Cause I was just watching the scoreboards, in the morning on Thursday saying, are you kidding me? How does he predict this? I mean, I love Ben on, but come on, Mark's all over it. And now he sits in seventh place. What do you think?
7 out of 7. There's lots of golf left. We're lots fine. Of golf. I mean, the thing for me is just to make sure that in the events where, you know, you're going to get some folks picking the same guys, like, in a couple of weeks time, perhaps at Phoenix, where there might be a whole big dash to jump on Ricky Fowler. You know, I'm not going to panic just yet, but in situations like that, I'm going to have to call someone sort of against the grain to make up some ground.
So Kyle, you and I both picked Ricky Fowler this week. He was the class of the field. I obviously think it was a great pick, but a little disappointing. You're sitting there right in second. How are you feeling about your position?
Well, I feel good. I was thinking about this as Landry was teeing off on 18, and I was thinking, would it have been a good pick to pick Andrew Landry on Wednesday? And when he's teeing off on 18, you're like, yeah, that would have been a great pick. But at the time, it would have been a horrible pick. And so I think a lot of this is like, it's, you can't do it on like based on outcome. So like Mark's pick of Ben on, that's a great pick. You know, it just
right.
based on the field, how he's playing, the profile of a winner there. So yeah, I feel pretty good. I'm going to try to go the whole year and only pick Oklahoma State guys. I went Charles Howell the first week. I went Charles Howell at Sony, and I went Ricky this week. And I don't know. Maybe I'll go like, is Taylor Gooch playing Torrey? I don't know. We'll see. I think he finished top 10 a couple of years ago.
Yeah. That's a good call. You never know. See, you bring up such a great point with you can't go on the outcome entirely. Like I have gone through this many times in my handicapping of golf tournament career where you have an Andrew Landry who wins. Would he have been a good pick? No, he would have been a terrible pick because he missed 5 straight cuts leaving into it. You can't find a reason to pick him, especially if you have to talk about it on a broadcast like this.
Yeah.
Michael Kim did the same thing, right? He won, he set a record at the John Deere, hasn't made a cut since, and he missed a lot of cuts beforehand too. So there's no signs that they're going to win. So that is what makes the one and done so challenging, but it makes picking winners even harder, I think. So there's a lot of golf left, a lot of heartbreak and a lot of triumph left to go in the one and done season. We're definitely going to keep you posted.
Okay. I got to ask you guys this, for the folks who do one and done that listen to this too. How much more does it have you favoriting guys on your PGA Tour leaderboards on the app? Because my favorites are all our league, and I'm watching how folks are going.
Yeah, it's the best. You flip it on. It's almost like a tournament within the tournament. It doesn't matter if Ricky comes in tied 10th because did anybody beat him?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really the question. So I love the favorites on the PGA Tour leaderboard there. Mine usually get a little bit long. They get a little bit longer than just the one and dones we have in this. Just saying. But the world of golf had a busy weekend. There was a lot more. We had the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship over in Europe, an impressive win over there. We had the Singapore Open taking place, obviously in Singapore. We had John Smoltz winning a celebrity golf tournament as well with an interesting club in the bag. We're going to get to all of that next, but first, let's hear a word from our partners.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain. Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Back on the First Cut. Lots to get into here in this second segment here. We got to get into the rest of the world. I mean, we got an entire world of golf to cover. We covered the American Express earlier. But Lee Westwood wins the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. Decades. Mark, what does this event mean to you? Because I know you had some very nice words to say earlier about this.
You know what? Lee Westwood is just one of my favorite human beings in the world. And that's not just because he plays good golf. He's just salt of the earth, you know, was a great amateur player. I mean, I remember Lee Westwood from my days in European Tour teaching out there when he had some real crooked teeth and he was chunky, and he'll admit it. But the guy could just really play. And then, you know, battled the golf swing, saw multiple golf instructors, and just fell into the doldrums. I mean, he couldn't hit the thing. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, but then went back to what he did and sort of steadily clawed his way back to the top of the game. And now the guy looks evergreen to me. And the way he won was just, it represents everything to me that I love about golf. You know, golf is this, it's the game of a lifetime. And yes, the PGA Tour and the European Tour, it's a young man's game, because these guys, it's incomprehensible how far some of them can move the ball and how fast it moves through the air. But Lee Westwood has kept himself in decent shape. He stayed pretty mobile. He's pretty much stayed injury free, which is a big deal for golfers as you start to age. And he's always just been dynamic in terms of accuracy. And when he gets going and when he finds a way to make a few putts, because that's the weakness, he's always going to be around. And I, for one, am a guy, you know, I pull for golfers to be successful because I know how hard it is. But I tell you what, if there's one thing that I want really badly, is for Lee Westwood to somehow stumble into a major championship, preferably the Open. Otherwise the Masters, he's pretty good there, but just somehow, because that would make the career complete, almost in the vein of his good buddy Darren Clark. You know, Clark, he was a legend of European golf, legend of global golf, and then gets his Open, and it's been, you know, plain sailing from there. So I was so excited when I turned it on this morning and saw him win. That was very cool.
I mean, what a show we've had so far. We have Mark calling, picking Lee Westwood to win the Masters, and we have Scotty Scheffler making the Ryder Cup team. Is he crazy here, Kyle? What do you think? I mean, we've had too much of this going on already today. I don't even know what to say.
I said the Open first. I said the Open first, Masters second.
Okay. Okay. The Open.
Okay. So this brings me to one of the great what ifs, since I've been covering golf the last 8 years. And that is, what if Danny Willett's baby comes a week after it was born in 2016?
Westwood wins the Masters.
Where that leads you is a Westwood Spieth playoff in 2016 at the Masters. And that's just, there's so many sliding doors when it comes to and it's like, who can, you know, you can't control like when your kid is born, and Willett was like on the fence of whether or not he was going to play. I mean, Westwood's record at Augusta, and to Mark's point, so he hasn't played the last 2 years. Before that, going backwards from 17, he was T18, T2, that was 2016. T46, and then 7, T8, T3, T11, second. Yeah. I mean, in the 2010s, his record at Augusta was right there with anybody, and especially right there with anybody who didn't win. I'm with Mark. I think it would be so cool to see him win a major championship and specifically the Open, but he kills it at Augusta. So that's going to be fun to see him there. I think he got in with that T4 at the Open last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, he's after this victory, from what I understood, and correct me if I'm wrong, his world ranking is going to hop from in the mid 60s to somewhere in the 30s. And so he's pretty well a lock for Augusta National in the fall. And it's amazing at this stage in one's career. There's an element of free swinging on the go because everything is just bonus. It's gravy for Westwood now. Now it remains to be seen what he's going to feel like on Sunday night, Saturday night, if he's in contention at one of these things and does he get it done? But he does look like he's swinging free and it's almost like, well, whatever happens, happens. I've had a great career and you know, everything's just bonus now. And there's something to be said for that.
And you know, it's not like he just went over to a small European Tour event and won in kind of a weaker field. This was on the European Tour. This is a strong field. You got Tommy Fleetwood shooting 63. This seems to be the Tommy Fleetwood Invitational. He loves this golf course. He loves this tournament and usually wins it. And you had Matthew Fitzpatrick right behind him, Louis Oosthuizen right there. You had a couple of the American players going, Brooks Koepka, and Patrick Cantlay as well, although they finished at 8 under par, tied 34th. So speaking of some of those players, when you look at Brooks Koepka, what do you think of the start to his career or the start to his year? Are you worried at all about his knee? I'll start with you.
No, I don't think so. You know, he had the one bad round. He shoots 75 in the second round. And other than that, you know, he played well. He's 66 in the first round and then closed 70-69. I thought it was a good start for him. I think that nobody really knew what to expect. I mean, he hadn't played in, you know, since October when he withdrew from the CJ Cup. So I don't get super concerned about injuries when it comes to somebody like him.
Mark, what do you think?
You know what? I was just listening to what Brooks had to say. A golfer coming out who hasn't been competitive for a while, it's always in many instances, in my opinion, if they play well, there's some fortune involved. And to Kyle's point, he played really sound on day one, 6 birdies, no bogeys. I'm like, dang, look, this guy looks like he's right back in the saddle, but there's going to be an evening out that happens through 4 rounds of golf and the physicality of it didn't look like it concerned me at all. You know, there were a few left misses there in round 2 and, you know, for someone with that big strong grip and the club face that errs on the close side, if you're not pivoting hard, you're going to shut one down and hit the ball left. So that was bothersome to me some. But what I loved is what he said after the round. And someone's like, you know, one of the European Tour announcers is like, well, was it the knee? And Brooks is like, nah, I just didn't play very well. And then someone else asked about something else and he goes, no excuses. I just didn't play very well. And he was, that was Brooks Koepka. That's who he has been over the last few seasons. He's abrupt. He calls it like it is. There's no beating about the bush. There's no sugarcoating. And the way he was speaking, I was like, this guy's fine. He is absolutely fine. And he's got 4 rounds of golf under his belt. I'm sure that was some of the goal to get competitive for 4 rounds. And so now he's back in the saddle some. So, you know, 8 under par, you know, first tournament out. I don't think that was that bad at all.
I feel like when we've heard the narrative and we've had our discussions about the 2020 majors and everybody's had their talks about what they're predicting in the upcoming year. And you look at all of that, which Brooks Koepka's name was mentioned probably a lot less than it should be for a guy that has 4 major championships in the last 3 years. And then you look at around like the second round in this tournament where he shoots 75-3 over par. Mark, I agree with you, by the way, what he said afterwards was beautiful. Classic Brooks. And whether it's true or not, it's the best attitude. No excuses. This is what I did. I just did that. I just didn't play well. I'll play better tomorrow. And you kind of look at that and it's almost like we're falling for the trap again. And it doesn't sound like either of you are, but we've fallen back into the trap of, well, Brooks hasn't been playing very well, blah, 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 leading into a major. And then all of a sudden he snaps off at Augusta and wins. I mean, I just feel there's a little bit of rust, maybe that's not the right word, but a little bit of reps that Brooks needs right now to get himself back into play. But I think it's going to happen very quickly. And when I look at that kind of an injury, a little patella tear, it's extremely painful. But once it's fixed, it's very often better than it was beforehand. And that's kind of in the lead up to this tournament, what Brooks was talking about, how he can actually squat down all the way. There's no pain in his knee. And it leads me to believe that he was playing through some pain last year as well. So the fact that it's fixed now is a scary sight for the rest of the world. I think once Brooks gets a couple of reps under his way, when we get to April and we're teeing it up at Augusta National, if you're not saying his name, I think you're really missing something.
Yeah, and we also haven't talked about how he ended Bryson DeChambeau's career on Twitter on Thursday.
Man. Was that on Twitter or was that on Twitch? Brooks responded on Twitter. Bryson's initial comment was on Twitch.
Yeah,
right?
Brooks responded on Twitter. I don't know if this is a case of one guy is joking and the other's actually serious, or if they're both joking.
Do you make anything of that, Mark? Did you get a chuckle out of that? You think they're both kidding around?
I'm still chuckling. I mean, I just love it when someone. Yeah, how many times? Okay, let's just put it this way, because I'm the guy who thinks deep, right? How many times have you crafted a tweet and then you'd be like, nah, I can't send that, you know? And you're like, dang, I still want to send this, but nah, I'm gonna let this thing sit in the drafts. Yes, Brooks going, whatever, man. Punch it, picture, send, because I do not give a continental stuff, and that is just, it's the ultimate competitor, and to me it's the ultimate individual who's completely comfortable with who he is because he doesn't give two hoots about what people are going to think, and then when he does this, because I don't think there was like him going, well, I'm going to get a bunch of followers out of this or whatever the case might be. He does this and it becomes absolute fodder for the Twitter sphere. And the next thing, the guy's legend is just growing. I just love his manner and I love how he doesn't really care what people think.
It was really cool. I think if you're Brooks and you're looking at Bryson, who's first of all on Twitch, I don't know much about Twitch, but he's playing video games here. And I'm wondering if you're Bryson, where do you have time to be making Twitch streams and playing video games when you're spending, you know, you're hitting the gym three times a day and you're becoming massive? I don't know where does Bryson sleep? That's my first question. My second question is, well, if you're Brooks Koepka, you're kind of just rolling your eyes. This is kind of like a younger brother who's poking you in the arm and he's got nothing on you. So I don't really know where this thing is coming, but Bryson all of a sudden is bulking up, thinks he's tough, and I think he poked the wrong bear.
I think Mark is big on Twitch.
I don't even know what Twitch is, man. Come on. Remember, I'm 49, okay? I'm still trying to be as cool as you are on Twitter, Kyle, so I'm still learning.
Kyle, you got to get on Twitch here and there, right? You got a little Fortnite in you these days?
No, dude. So my last foray into a new technology was the spring break thing like 3 years ago. When everybody was like Fowler and all those guys were posting on Snapchat, and I was like, I honestly like I struggled to get on Snapchat. I still don't know if that's like the actual terminology. So I stick with what I know. I stay in my lane on Twitter, and we'll go from there.
You're like Bill Belichick, right? Snapface and InstaChat and all those things. So it's a fun game. I don't know anything about the Twitch thing either. I know nothing about it. So Twitter's the place where you can find me, and it sounds like the two of you are exactly the same way.
Twitch sounds like something to me that someone does over a 5-foot putt yet late on a Friday afternoon. That's what Twitch is.
For sure.
Twitch is something that sends you to a mental doctor. Uh-huh. That's what it sounds like to me as well. That is too good. But anyway, also across the world, we had Matt Kuchar winning the Singapore Open. He shot 18 under, held off Justin Rose at 15 under. Jazzy J, I'm not going to try to say his name. I'm not going to get
brother.
Into the Let's hear.
I got you. I actually, last year at Bethpage Black, I had his group in the final round, and I was dispatched by our producer, Lance Barrow, to get him on camera pronouncing the thing. And so it's Jane Watanana.
Jane Watananan. How'd I do?
You're fantastic. You can use this in your show tomorrow morning.
Yeah, that's what I'll have to do. You know, we have this clip that we play on A New Breed of Golf, and it's actually, it must have been you who got him pronouncing the name right. So the audio clip starts off, he's pronouncing the name right, and then it's everybody else in the SiriusXM family who was calling the action, getting it completely wrong. And it is hysterical, the different kind of names that come out of his mouth. But it's a pretty good play from him, and great play from Matt Kuchar. Are we surprised to see him win at all? What do you think, Kyle?
I don't know. Maybe a little bit. You know, I didn't feel like he came out of the fall playing great. He was okay, I guess, at the President's Cup. I was actually surprised to see him and Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson in the field. I was up late on like Thursday night or Friday night or something, and I just flip it over to Golf Channel and I'm like, huh. Henrik Stenson and Justin Rose playing the Singapore Open. Okay. Let's
stay up a little bit later.
Yeah, it was great. I think it actually might have been the lead in to, the Abu Dhabi tournament. So, I'm not super surprised. The thing that's more, disconcerting is that, did you see this Ho Sung Choi thing?
That's what I was going to bring up next. Reckless endangerment. What do you think about that?
I mean, I've never seen this before. You see this at like a Major League Baseball game where there's not enough pine tar and it slips out of somebody, the bat slips out of somebody's hand. For people who haven't seen it, he lets go of his club like on his follow through and it almost hits his playing partner in the knees.
Hey, you're making this sound like it's out of the blue. I can count many guys. JT is a master at letting go of a golf club. He just has obviously practiced this some because the thing lands behind him. With the gyrations that Ho Sung delivers in the follow through, he had turned almost right side toward the target. So when he let go, this thing was coming off horizontal to his target line.
It was like a corkscrew.
Well, he does that on every shot. I mean, if you're playing at a group with Ho Sung Choi and you know that he's going to be doing triple axels after every shot he hits, you got to give him at least a 15-foot radius, don't you think?
That tee was some tight confines there. I actually looked at this and there were some trees on the right and it looked like a bit of a fall off. So everyone's on there and he made the move that is drawn, you know, much fanfare all around the world and let go of the club at the wrong time.
Ho Sung Choi is back. It's great to see.
Yeah. I actually last year at Pebble Beach, he got an invitation. So I made a point in the practice day to go and watch him and in the practice rounds doesn't do that very much. It's when he hits one that's a little on the edge that's when the body English gets the heat gets turned up.
It's amazing how that brings him to fame. I mean, he is a sensation. We all love him, and we saw him last year at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I'm not sure if we're going to see him again this year, but I know that a lot of people would love to see that because it's exciting to watch. You know, hopefully, he can just hang on to the club for a little bit longer, or release it a little bit earlier. Right, he's got to time up the release in that twirl. So we'll see what happens. But hey, next week you two are both going to be down at the PGA Merchandise Show as the first cut goes on the road. Have you guys been there before, Mark? I know you've been there many times. Kyle, have you been down there?
I have. This will be my fourth in a row, I think, and it's fun. You know, I think, as with anything, the most fun part of it is just seeing people that you don't see often, which for me is going to be Mark and, you know, some of our other editors and producers that'll be there. So that'll be a blast. It's like the biggest building I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. The convention center in Orlando, you could like probably put like a 9-hole course in there and have room. So yeah, it'll be a good time. Looking forward to doing the podcast in person so we can holler at each other and interrupt each other without trying to figure out when the other person's going to stop talking. So that'll be great.
I can't wait to be next to people and say, folks, that's Kyle Porter, and I want to see all the autographs that he has to sign. And like, there he is. It's going to be fun.
Bring two pens. You got to bring two pens next week, Kyle.
I'll stuck that's him up with Sharpie. A lot. The PGA I'll stop at the Sharpie booth and I'll get him.
Yeah, that's right. PGA show, that's exactly what it is. You run into people you haven't seen in forever, and everybody is in a good mood. Everybody wants to talk and hang out. So whenever if you're scheduling meetings down there, if any of you listening are headed to the PGA show and you're scheduling out some meetings, you got to make sure you leave yourself a 15-minute buffer on either side, because to get, as Kyle mentioned, the size of the place is one thing, but getting in between meetings, not only is it going to be a long walk likely, it's also going to be interrupted many times, which is always fun. So I know you two will have a great time down there. I wish I could make it down. Unfortunately, I can't next week. I'll be excited to watch to watch CBS return here to the world of golf, and they're going to host the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Mark, you're going to be on the call along with Frank Nablo, who's going to be joining the pod. Are you looking forward to that?
Oh yeah, Torrey Pines. You know, I hate to say this with respect to the other events, but that's sort of when the PGA Tour and the new season always starts for me. Obviously, it's the first CBS event, and it's the first real test of what a golfer has, because the South Course, the North Course now too, but that South Course is just a downright beast. And you got to drive it straight, you got to hit good irons, you got to be able to make saves around the place. And so it's the ultimate test. It's a major championship venue. It's a great field. It's a CBS show. So yeah, I'm jacked, and I'm looking forward to talking up with Davis Love, who's going to be on the crew, and Frank, obviously. And so it's going to be all sorts of fun.
I can't wait to see. It's a new team with new life out there. It's going to be very exciting to see. I can't wait. And, the biggest news of the tournament, I mean, let's be honest, Tiger Woods is going to be playing. He's going to be making his 2020 calendar debut. First PGA Tour start since winning the Zozo, although he did have the President's Cup in the meantime. Kyle, before we get going here, I just want to put you on the spot. Is Tiger Woods the winner at the end of next week? Are you taking him in the one and done, or are you saving him for a major?
I'll save him. I actually predicted, this might not age very well, but I predicted that he wouldn't win in 2020. So yeah, I'll probably save him for later on. I'm not sure where yet.
So what do you think of his chances this week though, or at the Farmers rather?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's hard because there's so many different, when we talk about Tiger, there's so many different angles you can take. Do you take the, he's won there 8 times? Do you take the, well, he hasn't really played a tournament in 3 months other than the President's Cup. Do you take the, well, everybody, and this is where I'm sort of fading him. Everybody is like going in expecting him to be, just awesome this year. And I feel like we went into, you know, after he wins the Masters, everybody's like, okay, it's on, lights out this summer. And then he was terrible. He seems to zig when people expect him to zag, especially over the last couple of years. So that's the only reason I'm fading him this year. He'll probably win next week and the next 5 tournaments after.
Yeah, right. That wouldn't be too bad. A 6th tournament win. Mark, you want to put a bow on that?
I'm saving him for a different event. There's another course that's just a little bit down the track that he is just as good at. And I think that's into the season where he's going to have enough competition and the body will be sort of ripe and ready, and he'll have all the feels to use the Tiger Woods thing, and the trash will be worked out, and those Poania greens for me are a lottery at times. And so you get Tiger on those Champions Bermudas and then he becomes a deal. So I think he plays well, but I'm going to save him for later on in the season.
Yeah,
TPC Deer Run.
I'm not actually. You guys know what I'm talking about. Come on.
Yeah, of course.
I'm talking about Bay Hill, right?
TPC Deer Run.
No, it's Bay Hill, and so I'm lining Woods up for that. But I might zag when you guys zig now that I've let the cat out of the bag.
See, this is the interesting thing. We're not supposed to really know who everybody's going to pick. Nobody's supposed to get an advantage. But here we are, weeks in advance, already deciding our pick. So we'll see if anybody holds true to it. But gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. That's all we have here for the First Cut. But next week is a big week. So we'll be looking forward to that down there at the PGA Merchandise Show, seeing you two guys in action together. I know that'll be entertaining. So, but I want to thank you all so much for listening. Kyle Porter, you can get him on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS, and you can get Mark Immelman at @Mark_Immelman. And I'm Greg Ducharme.
Real quick, we forgot something.
What's that?
What did we forget?
We forgot the John Smoltz stand-up putter.
Man, I gotta get one of those. Kyle,
oh, you're right.
That's the first stop you and I are making is at that booth, because I want to get one of those things.
What do you think, Mark? Is that a real, are you going to advise any of your players to use that thing?
Come on, Greg, you're a good golf instructor. You can set this thing down on the ground, step behind it. It stands by itself. You can line it up. I mean, come on now. Gee whiz. Yeah, I'm getting one of these things. I think they're awesome. Ernie Els was using a version of it for a while last year, and he was raving about the thing. So if it's good for Ernie, it's good for me.
Yeah, hey, well, you know, it was so interesting is Andrew Landry was lining up his putter on one of the holes out there late in the round. I think it was on 18.
I saw that.
He's just got a coin there, and I'm thinking to myself, this new stand-up putter, you stand it alone, you put the putter down first, get it aimed, and then you put the ball down, and then you go. It's a whole new routine we're going to be seeing. So that's really something else to see.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just, that was really funny.
No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, it's classic. I would not be surprised. PGA Tour players will try anything.
Late next week, you're going to see both Kyle Porter and I with one in the bag, promise you.
Yeah,
maybe Tiger at Torrey.
All right, guys, that's all we have for you tonight. So I hope you enjoyed. And hey, if you did enjoy, make sure you jump onto iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and give us a little review and a 5-star rating. It would be much appreciated. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.